text 51551 today with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Well, joining me now to look back on a busy weekend of sport, Ciarán Murphy of the Second Captains podcast, sports broadcaster Gráinne McIlwain, and our regular panellist Damien Lawler. Morning to all. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Miriam.
OK, listen, we have to start with a classic sideline meltdown, if we can call it that. Ciarán, Pep Guardiola didn't take losing to Liverpool too well yesterday. Videos of his antics have gone viral all over the world. What did you make of him?
Well, I saw, I think, Matt Dickinson of the London Times brought to mind Basil Fawlty whacking his Austin 1100. And that's actually the best description of it that I had heard, to be honest. It was a Basil Fawlty-sized sideline meltdown by Pep. And, you know, this is what happens, you know, when you put whatever it was, I think, Roy, you were saying, spend 800 million pounds worth of someone else's money, and then you realise that you have to go to the main contenders for the league title that you have with a truly terrible back five, a goalkeeper and back four that no one had any confidence in before the game even started. And, you know, it is kind of unfortunate that the narrative around these games gets set so much by referees and managers' reactions, petulant reactions to bad refereeing decisions, because it boiled down basically to a Trent Alexander-Arnold handball in the penalty area that wasn't given. 20 seconds later, Liverpool take the lead, and that set the tone for the entire game. Now, we should say that there was over 80 minutes of football still to be played after this decision, which Pep wasn't that bothered about talking about.
Yeah.
But funnily enough, you know, we can't kind of wring our hands at this either, because the media didn't want to talk about anything else either. You know, like, the fact of the matter was he suffered an injustice. He lost the plot. Everyone talked about nothing else. I mean, the Sky Sports coverage immediately after the final whistle was, we're joined here by Roy Keane, etc., etc., and we'll be talking about this for the next hour. lads, you know, there are other stuff happened in the game.
They're so childish, though, Miriam. Like, you know, even the whole week growing up, you're just like, you know, cop on, grow up. Like, you know, Pep Guardiola had given out about Manny diving, and then Jurgen Klopp commenting back about this. Okay, well, you know, there may be over-tactical stuff. And then they're both praising each other as being brilliant managers. You know, Liverpool were the better side on the day. You know, Liverpool deserved that win. It was a big statement of intent from Liverpool. Like, you know, I think they needed to win that game. But what I'm really interested in the narrative now, everyone's gone, oh, you know, they're winning by 8 points top of the league. You know, there's only 12 games played. But is Liverpool's league to lose? Like, how could they possibly lose this league? And I'm like, okay, there's two thirds of the way to go. Remember 1996, and Kevin Keegan were 12 points in front with Liverpool, and they thought, yeah, they're going to win a two and it all unravels. So I think from a Liverpool perspective, it's a big win, but now their mindset and focus for the next number of games, where is that going to be at? And they need to go on and kick on that.
Yeah, I mean, like that Newcastle team that you mentioned there, they were 12 points ahead, having beaten Manchester United 5-0 in January. So these, you know,
You're like an encyclopedia.
Well, I don't know, Miriam, it's, you know, it pays the bills, doesn't it? But that's what I mean, I think things have changed in that Liverpool obviously got, you know, nearly 100 points last year. So, you know, it is hard for you to see them losing three or four games at this stage. But
you don't know, though.
Meltdowns are nothing new in sport, Miriam. No. Like, I mean, you speak of that game, the 5-0 victory that they had. Maybe about a few months later, Kevin Keegan had his famous meltdown when Newcastle were losing the plot. And it was actually, I found it very hard to watch a kind of a genuine fella disintegrate right in front of your eyes, and became a famous worldwide clip. I felt no such empathy for Pep Guardiola, who behaved like a spoiled child, in my opinion. Here's a guy like who's done it all, seen it all. He's spent everybody's money in various continents, delivered huge success. But like, you have to be a big boy and stand up for the decisions that go against you at times as well. It's not going to... He looked like a petulant little...
The VAR is like sort of the elephant in the room here as well.
It's got to go, Ciarán, is it?
Well, no? I don't know that it has to go. Yeah, it has to be changed, though. I mean, the whole idea of it was to reduce the amount of terrible decisions that cost teams games. But what it actually has done is that basically it's given everyone an excuse to be annoyed all the time. Like, everything is up for debate, you know? And so if VAR wasn't there, you'd say, okay, that was a blown call. What are you going to do? You know, like, the referee didn't see it. It happened very, very fast. You know, he missed the call. That's it. Now you have people saying that it's like a vast worldwide conspiracy against, you know, Pep Guardiola and, you know, Manchester City. You know,
but Sorry, what I think is interesting and quite humorous in one way too, you know, we're talking about VAR yet again this weekend, but when you look at, say, Sheffield United playing Spurs and David McGoldrick had a goal that was disallowed, was it because of his toe?
Yeah.
You're kind of going, hello, like your toe, it's like, you know,
now
is that even...
We're coming around you from a position where Thierry Henry, the handball, the whole country would have screamed out for such a concept to be introduced several years ago, and Paul McShane and all these guys would have backed it 100% who were there on the day. But now, from an outsider's point of view, I think it's ruined the game. There's no spontaneity, the impulsive nature of striking. You can't celebrate a goal. There's the flamboyance has gone out of it as well.
Even Klopp said that yesterday. He said, like, I purposely wasn't celebrating. The interview on Matches Day 2 last night was, I'm purposely not celebrating wildly now because I'm waiting for it to be choked off. Yeah.
Do you think, Damien, does it mark a turning point in Guardiola's time at Man City? I see Eamon Sweeney writing in today's Irish, Indo, it looks like his best days are in the past.
He's definitely under pressure. He's got no defence. So unless he can clean that up in January, I think the season is going to disintegrate. Yeah. Like, they do look, the likes of Leicester City get at them, you know, they do look like that. They can be penetrated very, very easily. So there's always been a bottomless pit of money there for him to go back to.
And they have injury worries too.
Yeah, the thing with Pep as well is that, you know, his intensity, his, you know, drive, all that makes him a brilliant manager.
Do you also like him?
Like, I do, like, he has done amazing things, you know, like, absolutely astonishing. Like, if you talk about how many players or managers that you can say have truly changed the game or defined a 10-year period of any sport, I mean, Pep has without doubt been the towering figure in world football for the last 10 or 12 years, along with Messi, you know, and they were hand-in-hand for years in at Barcelona. But there is a time limit to how many years he can, you know, ask that much of a set of players. And I think, you know, 4 or 5 years is as much as Pep can do anywhere and as much as any dressing room of players can handle Pep, can bear him, basically. And I think that as Eamon says, I think this may be a defining moment.
And of course, Damien Gronje, while Liverpool and Man City were fighting out at the top for the first third of the season, Brendan Rodgers and Frank Lampard have been gradually building up their Leicester and Chelsea teams.
Yeah, I watched Derby County last year an awful lot, and Lampard was the coach there, and he gradually got a stamp on that team and did try to play good football. There was some gaps in that team, but when the Chelsea job came up, I felt he probably couldn't say no to it, and he didn't. As for Brendan Rodgers, you'd have to say, Gronje or Miriam, you'd have to say that he has something as a coach, and he's reinvented Jamie Vardy, who had probably not kicked the ball in anger for the previous management teams. He's got him going again, and Leicester, they're fantastic to watch again. Celtic were good to watch under his tenure as well. And whatever you say about some of the stuff he comes out
with. I think with Brendan Rodgers, he's a really good man manager. He seems to be fit to tap into atmospheres and tap into people and circumstances, and that empathy. He obviously has very strong motivation for that, because all the players are playing for him. They're playing really, really well. And I suppose with Chelsea as well, with Frank Lampard, I mean, it's interesting. It's a really young side as well. Like, you know, I think it was the average age, 24 years age in Chelsea. So I think he's tapped into bringing youth through. And I suppose at the start, for, you know, things can go very differently as well. Like, you know, David Moyes said you couldn't turn that job down, and look what happened. Like, a lot of people were saying about Frank Lampard too, maybe it's too soon. What management experience does he actually have? But he's doing really, really well, and it's going well for him.
And of course, Kieran, there was a lot of Irish interest across the Premier League this weekend, considering the massive game this day next week against Denmark, and the Sheffield United contingent had a good weekend.
Yeah, very good. I mean, you know, I don't know if you were watching it on Saturday afternoon, but John Egan, Enda Stevens, McGoldrick's disallowed goal we've mentioned already. I mean, when you think even back to 3 or 4 years ago, the Irish team that will be named against Denmark more than likely will probably have 7, 8, 9 regular Premier League starters, which is a position we haven't been in a long time. Now, a lot of that is down probably to the Sheffield United promotion last year and all those guys. But I mean, those guys still have to prove themselves at Premier League level, and they've been really, really good. Sheffield United have been one of the stories of the season, really, in a quiet way.
Kieran Clarke is back, rejuvenated the centre-back, scoring 2 weekends in a row. I mean, I feel that a lot of people are talking down the game against Denmark, saying we might stutter to a 1-0 victory, a Shane Duffy header or something like that. But I think, as you say, like, there comes a time where you have to back yourself. For some younger players coming up, particularly two forwards in Tripart and Aaron Connolly, if they were Welsh, they would have 7 or 8 caps by
but
now.
But there's a big concern about Aaron Connolly, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a groin strain.
I would love to actually see him playing up front with McGoldrick and see them have a go. I mean, there's better to have loved than lost than to have never loved at all.
Apparently Parrott is going to play some part on Thursday against New Zealand in the friendly beforehand, so... I mean, there is plenty of reasons to be positive. I mean, I still think Denmark are going to be too good for us, but we still have the there's still a playoff, you know, as a result of the... I mean, we can't get out of the Euro 2020, it seems. It's harder to not qualify than it is to qualify. They'll keep giving us chances until we qualify. Fingers crossed.
There's a big qualifier at lunchtime tomorrow as well. Vera Pauls, Ireland side taking on Greece.
That's right. And we've mentioned, we've heard it in the sport earlier on today. That's right. They're playing tomorrow now against Greece. So we just wish them all the best. The kickoff is on RT2 as well. I suppose they've already won against Montenegro and Ukraine. They've scored 5 goals, conceded 2, and it's the last fixture 2019, and then they have big games coming up in 2020.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a massive moment for this team as well. I mean, you talk about momentum in sport, and you know, the Irish rugby team, they were obviously playing, looking for only their second win of 2019, and they lost due to a last minute try on Saturday to Wales. The hockey team last weekend, I mean, this is the moment for the Irish women's football team to push on. And if they can keep winning, they're not going to finish first because Germany are going to dominate that group. But if they can keep winning and qualify for a major tournament, we've seen what a huge momentum, what a game changer that could be for women's football in Ireland. And all you need to do is qualify for one of these tournaments. And as it happens, it's going to be in England, which would, you know, multiply it by a factor of 10 probably. So that's a huge game tomorrow. If they can win in Greece and keep it up against Montenegro, I think in March, then they stand a massive
Another chance. Busy weekend for club GAA, Jamie, and a big win down in Tip.
Bursley have, I suppose it was 86 when they last got out of Tip. Very, very traditional club. As I mentioned last week's show, a lot of heartbreak and tragedy down that parish over the last 18 months or so. They're doing really well as a senior hurling team. Like work rate and turnovers is the key to it all, really. And they had a fine win at the weekend. They progress even further now in beating Glen Rovers. I suppose East Kerry winning for the first time in 20 years, that's another story there. Portlaoise got through in a penalty shootout, 5-4 against St. Pat's and Wicklow. They're kind of the standout. They had it tough to get past.
Well, they were always going to have it tough against Ballintober. I actually kind of fancy Ballintober to win that game, just by dint of the fact that Cur Féin have, you know, taken to a replay for the second year in a row in the Galway County Final by Tuam last weekend. But they're just, you know, what we see in club games at this time of year, I think, when it gets to November, you know, November can be a great leveller in ways, in that, you know, the ground is a lot heavier, the weather is probably going to be pretty terrible. But what it actually rewards is teams that just know how to win. You know, all these games come down to
that. And David Clifford keeps meeting the expectations people have of him.
It's unbelievable, really. And Paddy, his brother, looks like he's going to be called in too. But I just find with David Clifford, like, you know, for such a young man that there's so much expectation on him, he never fails to really deliver, like, on the day. And people would say he had quite a quiet game. The last everybody said ended up scoring, I think, 1-3.
But
you can kind of, it's nearly like the passing of a baton as well in Kerry, isn't it?
I don't know, did you read this article by Tony Lean in The Examiner on Saturday, which was really, really good? It was basically Mikey Sheehy, Morris Fitzgerald, and Colm Cooper talking about each other, and then also David Clifford. I mean, David Clifford is, I think, 20.
He's 20,
and he's already been talked about, you know, by, not alone in the same breath as, but by Mikey Sheehy, Morris
Fitzgerald. It hops off, I've met him a couple of times, interviewed him, absolutely hops off. I'd say he pays no heed to it. I think he goes to games, puts the hoodie up, you know, that he's not playing himself, just gets on with it. Fantastic talent. I saw his brother playing with the Kerry Juniors season before last. You know, he looked fairly sharp as well. So I think once you're built for the big occasion, and once you're dealing with the hype from the age of 15, 16 that he's been, he'll be
okay. You know, you still actually need to remind yourself how good the kid is, though. You know, he's 20, he's won 2 All-Stars. Like, I think Jim McConnelly has 2 All-Stars. Mm. David Clifford has 2 in, by the time he's 20.
Yeah, so he's brilliant. He's grown.
Before we leave the GAA, I just want to mention the women's as well. Like, you know, there was the All-Ireland Club semi-finals on the weekend, and Kilcarran Clonburn from Galway, they've got through to their first All-Ireland final in 2 weeks' time. They beat Foxrock Cabinteely, who were finalists last year. And then Mourne Abbey from Cork, they're through to an All-Ireland final again. They're the current All-Ireland champions. They beat Dunamine from Monaghan. So that was a really tight game for them to get through, you know. So and I suppose Dunamine will be kicking themselves. They only got 1 point in the second half. So Dunamine and Kilcarran Clonburn will be an interesting final.
Yeah, and I don't know that you could pick 2 places farther apart ideologically than Kilcarran and Clonburn and Foxrock and Cabinteely. So that's a pretty amazing victory for my neighbours in Kilcarran and Clonburn.
And listen, seems to be strange talking about rugby again so soon after the World Cup, Kieran, but we're back to interprovincial fixtures this weekend. Quite a few internationals lined out.
Yeah, and you know, in a weird kind of way, you know, people talk about like a World Cup hangover, you know, and it does seem quite strange for these players to be back playing. But in ways, I think the players themselves were probably anxious to get back and play this weekend. But I do feel that, you know, it might be, you know, Wile E. Coyote running four or five steps after the end of the cliff edge. You know, that the momentum has kept them going and they want to just get back on the horse and play. But at some stage, the World Cup is going to come back and bite them, you know. And I kind of feel like maybe it's not going to be this week. It might not be next week. But at some stage in December, they're just going to be like, oh, God, this season is growing.
Apart from Leinster, because, again, they just show their strength and depth. Like, they're just so talented. Like, they have Ronan Keller, who's, I think he got a sixth try there in playing at hooker. Like, you know, just brilliant, brilliant performances. But I think for Munster, what's been really difficult for them is that they won against Ulster, but they've massive injury worries now. Like, they're at 10. It's going to be very difficult for them.
I just find it hard to come back down from the... There was no high for us in the World Cup, but it's just... It's a competition that's... You know, we'd be here 20 weeks' time still talking about the Pro 14.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great for development of players and, I suppose, to give players coming back from an injury. But that's... I think
the Champions Cup's coming up this weekend as well. So I think a lot of people will be turning their attention to that as well.
Well, thanks to the three of you today, Damien Lawler, Ciarán Murphy, Gráinne Macha.